Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's talk neurodiversity, because a group of teachers and psychologists and early childhood educators are asking parents and schools to wise up to the signs of neurodiversity in our young people. Around 1 in 10 New Zealand children have an invisible brain development disability that can make classroom life anywhere from difficult to insurmountable. That is 3 kids in a class of 30. And they're using Neurodiversity Celebration Week, which is this week, to raise awareness of the common signs of neurodiversity and equip people with the tools to help kids learn. Tammy Harris is the chief executive of the group behind this campaign. It's called Acorn Charitable Trust. And Tammy joins me now in the Auckland studio. Kia ora to you.
Kia ora, Emil.
It's nice to have you here. Thank you for coming in. Tell me, first of all, a bit about this campaign you are running.
Well, we're really excited to have the opportunity really to raise awareness and to celebrate the fact that we're all different. And without our differences, the world would be an extremely boring place. And we want people to understand how those differences can also impact learning and can impact kids at school. We find with the children we work with and across New Zealand that schools are not equipped, don't have the training and the resources, not their fault, to support some of our tamariki. And so we're really hoping to raise awareness about that and help people advocate for better support at school and better understanding and identification of neurodivergence.
When we talk about neurodivergence, what do we mean? What does that term mean?
Good question. And it seems to be always evolving.
Yeah.
So I like to think of neurodiversity as kind of each of our brains are different, right? We think in different ways. We process sensory information in different ways. We perceive the world differently. That's neurodiversity. So all of us in this room, we're all neurodiverse, yeah. But individuals can be neurodivergent. So that would be people whose thoughts, perceptions, feelings have sort of a, you know, pattern that's outside of kind of the norm of neurotypical behavior. So sort of outside of the bell curve.
It's the bell curve.
On the ends. Yeah, exactly. So a real different way of being in the world.
Is it one of those things, do you think, that maybe like mental health more broadly, where we, as a society, barely even acknowledged yet, let alone talked about in a broad societal way, this thing for a long time up until relatively recently. And so maybe there's quite a few people who are still kind of getting to grips with what we're actually talking about here.
Absolutely. I think it is relatively new, and certainly the terms neurodiversity and neurodivergence are new. You know, I'm kind of ancient. And back when I was a kid, the kids that we're now calling neurodivergent were referred to in many negative terms, weird, bad, naughty. And you think back to the kids in your class who might have been a little bit irritating, or they weren't sure what was going on, or they weren't doing what was expected. Mm-hmm. And some of those kids are the kids that we're talking about now, are kids with neurodivergence who probably just needed a bit more support.
And that term neurodivergence, I mean, it's necessarily an umbrella term, right?
Yeah.
But beneath that umbrella term, there are specific disabilities that people would recognize?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So there are different conditions that are sort of typically fall under that umbrella. And those, the most common would be ADHD, dyslexia, dysgraphia, sort of the specific learning disabilities, autism, fetal alcohol spectrum, Tourette's, a whole bunch that most people would not be aware of. Things called dyspraxia, developmental coordination disorder. There's a whole bunch, because let's face it, we're all very different and brains develop in very different ways. And so there are a lot of different conditions that fall under that.
You have 3 kids.
Yes.
Each of whom is neurodivergent. Tell me a bit about your family, if you wouldn't mind.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, yes, we're a very interesting, neurospicy family. everybody sort of, you know, goes their own way, which I think makes us interesting. Our youngest son has more complex differences that have required a lot more support over the years. And so I think being in New Zealand, you hear from my accent that we're originally from the United States and we moved here in 2012. Mm-hmm. And our journey in New Zealand with our child, who is neurodivergent, has more complex needs, has definitely been quite challenging. Even as a person who works in the field, I've struggled to figure out how to get his needs identified, how to access support in the system, how to access support outside of the system privately. There's really no clear pathway in New Zealand. And so parents, myself included, have to fight really hard and be incredibly resourceful to find the things that they need for their child. So I was telling you before the show, we started our New Zealand journey in Queenstown, and there just weren't enough resources for us. We couldn't find the therapists that we needed and the support that my son needed to be able to stay in school. In fact, when we left Queenstown, he was only allowed to attend school 2 hours a day, and I actually had to be at school with him to supervise him because the school did not have the resources for him to learn. Yeah. It was pretty shocking from a, sort of American perspective where that would be very illegal. And I know here as well, it's the law that children, have the right to be educated full time, but that's not what we see in practice.
Well, because I imagine, one of the things that maybe some listeners would be thinking here would be some behaviors that you might see, particularly when a child is younger, might be brushed under the carpet of, they're just kids.
They're boys.
Boys will be boys. Girls are difficult at this age. It'll come right. It's just a phase. And the point at which, that is not the case. And when you actually do, and how you go about, what the journey kind of looks like. I mean, talk us through that.
Yeah, I think, parents come to the realization, at various stages in development based on what their kids' needs are. So I think often parents who, have older children who've developed, fairly typically will notice earlier, maybe with their younger child, if they're developing differently. Mm-hmm. They might notice speech delays. They might notice different behavior when they're around other people. They might notice that they're extremely shy, various things, different sensory reactions. They don't want to wear clothes or they don't want to eat certain foods. And so when they start seeing those signs, that's typically when parents will start asking. They'll start looking around saying, okay, is this normal? Should I be concerned? They might hopefully talk to their GP and say, little Johnny isn't speaking yet and he's two. We're not really hearing anything. What should we do? And that's when we really need GPs, early childhood teachers, to know the signs so that they can help parents by identifying, yes, you're right, this is a red flag. It would be great to have an assessment done so that you can determine what your child's needs are to support that early development. Because we know the earlier you get onto it, the better the outcomes for our kids.
What does an assessment look like?
It, again, depends kind of what area of development we're looking at.
Yep.
But if you were concerned perhaps that your child had global developmental delays or autism, that would look like a psychologist assessing your child. So they would do a full developmental assessment, looking at the different developmental domains. So that would be looking at their communication skills, looking at their physical coordination, motor skills, really looking at their self-help skills. There are all kinds of assessments that can be done by a psychologist to really give you a sense of what your child's support needs are.
It takes a while to get a diagnosis here too.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's a real journey. I think the average wait time across New Zealand is about 1 year, 9 months. And that's, if you got onto it right away and got on a wait list, that's in the public system. There's also wait lists in the private sector. It's just not accessible to people when they need it. And you think, if you have a two-year-old that you're concerned about and you don't get an assessment until they're almost four, you've lost precious years for early intervention.
You talk about America as a sort of point of contrast to this. And, there are obviously a lot of things that are not great about the American medical system, but this is one area where America is actually pretty advanced.
Yeah, it's funny. When I moved from there, I didn't really think it was all that great. Yeah. But then,
no more medical insurance.
Yeah, I was really excited for that to come here and have health insurance. But on the other hand, I think that there is a robust system in the U.S. that has sort of a continuum of care within education for all sorts of needs. So what I find difficult in New Zealand is that there's really only two categories of support for kids in education here. So there's something called ORS funding, which is ongoing resource scheme, which is for the highest needs children. And then there's really no other consistent funding category. So when we think about neurodivergence being, you know, 1 in 10 kids, that's a huge cohort of kids who need learning support. But those kids, you know, the 9% who don't qualify for ORS funding really have no support and no funding throughout their education that's consistent.
With a wide spectrum as well, not much resourcing, with a wide spectrum of people who might require totally different levels of care.
Exactly, exactly. And what would be really great is if there was a continuum where, you know, there's high needs and then there's in between where you get a little bit of support, or you have a teacher's aide that is actually trained and understands how to support your needs, or the teacher themselves, or you're in a classroom that's specifically structured for kids with, you know, whatever the particular need is, so you can kind of get a jump on development in that way. And some kids will need support all through school, maybe with just study skills or just helping them organize themselves. There's a lot of kids who have, you know, quite mild learning disabilities like ADHD in many forms. Inattentive type can be, there's some simple strategies that schools can use to help those kids to be successful at school. Same with dyslexia, lots of things. There's so many little strategies that schools could easily implement, but they need to know what they're seeing and they need to know how to do that.
And we're not necessarily talking big picture, hundreds of millions of dollars rolled out across the country kind of thing after a long gestation period where everybody gets to have their say about how it works, right? Like, you're talking little things.
Yes, I'm talking little things. And that gestation period you're talking about, that has been happening since I arrived here. There have been so many parliamentary inquiries and submissions and committees and so on. Enough of the committees. Like, let's just get down to some practical strategies that can be taught in teachers' college that school leadership know about and can implement in their school and have across their school, so every teacher has a toolbox and they have some basic ideas about, ooh, I wonder if this child, maybe he's not just lazy. Maybe it's not that he doesn't care. Maybe it's that he actually is struggling with his attention and focus. And maybe there's some ways that I could help him. And that's what we want from our teachers, is to have that ability to identify, have empathy, and then make a plan and have some strategies.
What sorts of things off the top of your head would you be talking about? They're little tools in a teach, and there will be some teachers who are listening right now. so, you know, little things that could be in that toolbox.
Yeah, I think, you know, for a child that you want to complete a task, often our particularly ADHD kids and our kids on the autism spectrum, they have a really hard time breaking things down into little steps. They'll see the assignment and it'll be this, oh my God, it's this giant thing. How am I going to do this? I don't even know where to start. And that's exactly it. They really don't know where to start. Yeah. And so if teachers can just help break down what's the first thing that needs to happen, and then what's the second thing that needs to happen, it's much less overwhelming. And the child can actually have a sense of progress and achievement as they go through those steps. And they may not have the skills yet to do that themselves. But if the teacher's working with them and showing them how to do that, they'll gain those skills. And then hopefully in secondary school, they'll have those skills to be able to manage their studies.
You talk about the endless working groups and commissions and, you know, thinking about this. And I understand the frustration with that. But there is a political element to this too, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, having been in New Zealand now about 11 years, you know, I've seen governments sort of flip-flop, you know, every 3 years or 6 years. And it really does feel like, you know, there's sort of a new thing gets rolled out, big investment, we're doing it this way now, and then 3 years later it changes. And it's frustrating because I think those of us on the ground, what we would like to see, and certainly the families that we work with, what they would like to see is a long-term strategy looking at starting with early intervention, choice for families across the developmental span. So that would mean that Ministry of Education, Ministry of Health, Ministry of Social Development actually need to work together to create long-term plans. So we get rid of that siloing where it's, no, I only do this and I only do that. For families, that doesn't work. You have a human being that requires support from health and education and MSD. And so if there could be a way to bring those together to create a cohesive plan over a lifetime, that would be an absolute game changer.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? I think a lot of people in a lot of sectors would think that as well.
Yes, yeah, I think so.
Something more predictable unfolding over a longer period of time. Now, I mean, I was staggered to read this, so I know the answer to this question, but I'll ask you it anyway. How much a teacher in training is taught about neurodiversity at Teachers College?
Very little. Yeah. Obviously, I'm not a teacher, so I don't know the exact hours. But from what I've heard from quite a few teachers is they basically got an hour on autism and dyslexia, ADHD. And so it's not enough. And most of the teachers that we work with would say, you know, I don't know. It's not part of training. And so we can't expect them to know what to do and how to identify these things until we actually make that part of their training, which is essential because, as we spoke about, you know, if we've got 10% of the population who need these issues identified and they need support, then the people on the ground are the teachers. They have a huge impact on kids' development.
You've talked about, you know, your wish for Neurodiversity Celebration Week and this sort of wider campaign. I imagine there will be people listening too, though, who are thinking, this might be the case with my kid, but I don't really know what to do. And, you know, as you've mentioned, everybody's situation is going to be different. Every person is going to be different. Everybody's mind works in a different way. But in terms of broad strokes, particularly for parents and also for teachers who are in this situation, what general advice would you have?
I think my first advice would be to – it's easy as a parent to get wrapped up in our fear about the future and feeling inadequate, that we don't know what to do to meet our child's need. I think – stepping back and trying to identify what are the things that are going well that my child is able to do or does enjoy, what are the interests that they have and the talents that they do have, and trying to build on those so that child has some place where they feel successful or they feel like there's something they really like and are good at. And then I would get into the advocacy, because the reality is, as a parent of a child with different learning needs, unfortunately, it's on us to be the fighters for our child and to get in there and go into school and say, hey, my child's not learning and I'm hearing about these things going on at school and I'm wondering what's happening and what we can do together, how we can work together to support my child. I think the more collaborative we are in our approach at school, the much better things are going to be for the child, rather than going in and being like, you're not doing this, you're not doing that.
Yeah.
You know, odds are the
teacher.
Which
would be tempting sometimes.
It is, and you can feel frustrated, and that's understandable. But the more you work together with your teacher, odds are the teacher's feeling the same way and wants to hear from you, because you as the parent are the expert, you know. And if you put your heads together, you probably come up with a really good plan.
Really interesting stuff, Tammy. Thanks so much for coming into the studio and chatting to me about that.
Thank you so much, Emil. It's been a pleasure.
And that is Tammy from the Acorn Charitable Trust. And if you want to check them out online, the website is www.acornneurodiversity.co.nz.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.